Welcome to the Social Connection Podcast. Each week, you'll hear actionable tips on social media marketing, interviews with entrepreneurs, and business tips. My name is Atish Palmer from Metric Connect Digital Marketing. Thank you for your time with me today, and enjoy the next podcast. Hello, everyone, to the Social Connection Podcast. I have Keshav Sudera from Design Studio Architects today. We wanted to have a conversation with Kesh on his journey being an entrepreneur, him becoming an architect, and also just to find a little bit more about the business, about yourself, and where you're taking the business. So introduce yourself to our listeners, Kesh.
Right. Okay. Thanks, Atish, for inviting me to the podcast. Right. So my name's Keshav Sudera, and I run a architect practice called Design Studio Architects. We're based in Leicester, in a city centre, and we've been running since 2013. So we kind of work in various sectors, predominantly in the residential sector in a variety of forms, but we do some kind of commercial work as well. So it's a bit of a mix in terms of what we do. We've kind of grown from kind of working on the smaller kind of domestic projects to a lot larger kind of mixed use and large housing development schemes now with a lot of different people.
Okay, so just to let the followers know, even though Kesh comes in here as an architect, he's a friend of mine, and we've known each other from college, right?
From college, sixth form college.
Yeah, and Kesh used to go to Sheffield University.
Yeah, so I was up in Sheffield studying, yeah.
So after you graduated,
yeah,
you didn't just go into the business, right? Because I remember talking to you, you were with another firm.
Yeah, so if people know how the architecture kind of course works, it kind of split up, it used to be split up into kind of three separate degrees, separate courses you have to take, and you have to also kind of go through a kind of like a professional development process where you have to get work experience, and it's all got to be logged.
Okay.
So the way it used to work was you have 7 years as a minimum process. So after obviously college days, I went up to Sheffield, obviously where you went as well. And then I studied there for a 3-year kind of undergraduate degree. Whilst I was there, I then decided to stay in Sheffield a little bit longer, and actually got an opportunity to work in a small practice there, probably about 6 people, mainly on like house extensions and small basic projects around the kind of Yorkshire, kind of Sheffield side, in that sense. But then once all that finished, my intention was obviously to kind of carry on and get to that full chartership. So I came back to the Leicester School of Architecture, and where I then did a further 2 years, which is obviously, again, full-time degree course as a postgraduate course. So once that was complete, for me, I was lucky enough to kind of be awarded Young Architect of the Year from Leicestershire and Rutland. So,
oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, so from there, I was then given a business card by one of the judges, who was a senior partner at Pick Everard.
Oh, yeah.
Now, Pick Everard, one of the UK's largest multidisciplinary practices, and they're based on Charles Street as a headquarters.
But in Leicester.
Yeah, but they've got branches all across the UK. They've got London branches, Derbyshire, etc. But, yeah, they gave me the opportunity to come in for an interview. That interview obviously went well, and, then I was able to get an offer there, and I spent 5 years at Pick Everard. And the good thing about Pick Everard is they're a big machine, and they only work in certain sectors, but they teach you the way it should be taught. So they teach you to the book, and you learn a lot through kind of public sectors and how they operate in their kind of education sector and all those kind of areas. And the good thing was, obviously, whilst I was there for 5 years, they also sponsored me to kind of go through the chartership as well. So my final portion of the degree, they put me through and sponsored it all. And obviously, yeah, I was able to qualify.
Did you have a vision to stay with them?
No. So when I joined, my plan actually was to only be there for 5 years. That's all my plan was. I think, reason being, I think...
With the intentions of doing yourself.
Yeah, I think opening my own practice. I think there's two things. I think one is the fact that growing up, my parents, for example, they've had their own businesses, and I've always seen that as a norm. So then also when you start working for someone, it feels a bit strange when you've got to report to someone in that kind of way.
Yeah.
So for me, having your own business was kind of the norm, just watching my parents. But also growing up, my dad, although he wasn't generally in the property area, property sector, he did build a self-built family house, and I was probably about 8 years old at the time. So I was watching that as a kid growing up, and he was inviting me to kind of architect meetings. And
do you think that's made the biggest
influence? That drove me. That was a big driver, because...
So not just the business, but the architect side of things as well.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, because what it is, you've got to... It's one of those where you've got to really commit. Because it's such a long course, you've got to really make sure you're in for the long haul.
When people say you're doing architecture, they roll their eyes and say, "Oh, you're here for a long time."
This is it. And I think what you see is a massive dropout rate in the undergraduate course. So you start with 40, and by the time you finish, there's probably about 20 left. Because what they realize is just too long-winded for them.
But then they're comparing against other graduates, and they're already earning fees.
They're earning salaries within 3 years, as in they leave the course and pretty much in a job.
Yeah.
With this one, yes, you can get a job, but you've also got to finish the course as well to be fully qualified. So some people, like I say, it depends obviously what you want to do, but my kind of drive came from, like I say, from a young age, seeing it being built firsthand for us as a house, and that was a good starting point. And then from there, like I said, I just progressed and learned more about design. And
so after Pick Everett, you were there for more than 5 years, I presume, then?
5 years and 1 month.
Oh,
so literally, but my idea was 5 years, and I literally left straight after my five years there.
Was that itching in the back of your head, thinking I'm going to get stuck in the rut?
It wasn't fixated on the 5 years, but then you've got to also, when an opportunity comes up, you've got to look at it, and you've got to think, actually, look, is this opportunity going to come again?
Yeah.
And the situation for me was I have a business partner now who I set this business up with.
Okay.
Now, he was working for a housing developer called Bloor Homes, so a big housing developer. Yeah. He had left that company and set up a small little practice, probably just him and one other guy, just doing some small house extension type projects. And then I got talking to him, thinking, well, actually, look, my intention is also to do something in Leicester.
And this could work together.
And with him being more of a technical background and me being more design-driven, it could be quite a good match to kind of have two different spectrums in one practice and start from there. And that's kind of what we did. So then we made a decision, and and that was it. And then in 2013, we pretty much set the company up as an architect practice, and went from strength to strength really from there, I would have thought.
Okay, so I've been one of your clients.
Correct.
And I've seen the growth, and where we're sitting here are in a posh office in Newark. So where does that, what make, because I remember talking to you when you bought this actual property, it gives you some sort of authority now as one of the, I presume you want to become the biggest in the East Midlands.
Yeah, what we want to do is obviously we're an architect practice. That's what we do. We don't have any kind of structural engineers or QSs or anything like that in our office. We're purely design driven, and that's kind of what we want to do. And we want to bring in the right kind of other consultants to each project, depending on what their background is for that specific project. So our drive is to become, like I say, the best we can, and really show how you can manage design projects in a certain way. Now, we've got quite a good strong team. We work in a very open plan type arrangement. So although we're in a nice old grade two listed building, upstairs we've obviously knocked it all about to kind of create that open environment,
more modern and contemporary.
It's more of a modern way of working. I've worked in offices where you sit in little rooms with 2-3 people. It's fine, it works for some people, but
it's not the creative
way of working. We like the idea that we have technical staff, design staff, all in one area. We can bounce ideas off of each other.
Someone overhearing something can just make a massive difference.
That's it. And literally just having a quick conversation with someone, and you can make sure then that can be implemented in your design process. So for us, like I say, it's offering a full design package with the technical ability as well, because there's no point just being purely in the design side of it. It can't physically be built, or it can't be built at the right price. So we want to make sure we've got kind of good chartered technologists here as well who can also tap into that. So we have best of both, I would have thought.
Okay, so for someone that doesn't know DSA, what do you specialize in, and what's been some of the projects we were talking about before starting this podcast? I think it might be good to inform our listeners on that as well. But if you let us know what you specialize in and what kind of projects have been done, something quirky, then it'd be good for our listeners to hear that as well.
No, so to give you an idea, when we first initially started, we pretty much were tapping into like your typical kind of house extension type market. But when we were at our very first office, so we hired a very, very small unit, probably the size of this room. And it was a very, very small unit which was available. And that was in the St. Matthew's part of Leicester.
Oh, yeah.
So it was fine as a starting place. But then what happened, within about 6 months of starting, our clientele started changing, and some of the projects we started winning were becoming in kind of quite key locations around the city. So people started seeing our brand and our signage. And like I said, very quickly, the clientele changed, and we decided actually being where we are isn't going to work for our brand as well going forward. So we relocated to the Newark side, which is where you got most of the kind of professional practices and design practices and solicitors, etc. And then our projects went from, let's say, the smaller house extensions to kind of major transformation projects where we're still working with extensions, but transforming houses to look pretty much completely different from what they would have looked like before. But then at the same time, we're doing a lot of bespoke new build, self-build houses. And then that then led to kind of apartment schemes and so mixed-use apartment schemes. And so we've got a good variety now on our books at the minute. So to give you an idea of how varied our portfolio is at the minute, so we're doing a 9,000 square foot self-built house at the moment in Leicester, okay. Which is made up of it's including a 3,000 square foot basement as well.
Oh, wow.
And we've basically got planning permission by just demolishing a small dormer bungalow, and this new kind of properties will be built there. And this one is very eco-driven as well, so that's one of the key aspects of what we like to push for as well. So from anything from like your Tesla tiles, which are going to be put onto this property, to from ground source heating.
Oh, wow, so they're saving.
Everything from solar panels, water storage heating, everything you can think of is considered on this project. And then at the same time, we've got a project which has been approved in the Culture Quarter of Leicester. So we're doing so it's artist workshops on the ground floor, and we've got 30 apartments above. So the idea for us was to kind of create this new apartment scheme. And unlike just throwing normal apartment schemes up, we wanted this kind of live, active frontage on the ground floor, because the Culture Quarter is one of those areas where it's
quirky.
It's a quirky little space, and people want to see the artists working. So we've got these nice big shop fronts which allow for people to see what's going on, and just to bring a bit of life to the streets, because some of the streets around there can be quite dead at night and nothing's really happening. But if we can kind of do some good creative solutions there and offer that mixed-use type environment, it really helps.
Well, you're helping the council with the...
Well, this is it. It's part of the regeneration. So and off the back of that, we've got regeneration programs in the St. Matthews area, where we've just had planning permission approved for 10 new... retail shops with 40 apartments above.
Oh, wow, okay.
And that's a big scheme. It's part of the regeneration program, but I think again the council was so keen to see something like this put forward, because employment, housing, all of that was considered, and includes social housing as well. So we've got projects like that. And then I've got another one which we spoke about just before we kind of logged on, but we were doing a brewery up in Burton, and it's a grade 2 listed brewery, and converting into 32 luxury apartments with a courtyard and huge amounts of green space around. It's quite an impressive spot, and that's currently in planning, subject to be approved in the next few months. So that's another exciting project. But
so you've got an array of
We've got an array. We do a lot of student accommodation. But one thing which probably you don't know so much about, because obviously a lot of stuff we talk about is residential. But we are doing more and more commercial units, so like industrial units. So we're doing projects in Leicester, around the West Midlands, East Midlands, because I suppose like storage units are quite a big thing at the minute for business.
I'm quite keen on these industrial and commercial builds, because there's a lot of investors now investing in them, because the leases are brilliant. You get a long-term lease for an investor is brilliant. But then you've got big online companies that are now getting big, and they need that sort of facility rather than a retail unit down in the city centre where the rates are
mad. Well, it's all online shopping, isn't it? So a lot of the stuff we're doing actually is kind of like small, well, big units which are subdivided into, so we're building brand new big units, subdividing to small units
into
for like kind of 5,000, 10,000 square foot units, let's just say, because there's so many people literally, like say, who've got online Amazon shops, eBay shops, things like that. So all they need is a storage area. And if you want, they kind of have a trade counter, but technically it's purely storage is all they ask for.
Yeah, with an office.
And that's it. And so all they need is just good location for logistics. That's all they care about. So we've been tapping into a lot of those kind of units, and we've been extending a lot of commercial units, so trying to add more for some of the kind of landlords there as well. But then another area we've been tapping into recently over the last 2 years is dental practices.
Really?
Yeah, we've got about 8 on our books at the moment.
How did that happen?
It seems a bit of a random one, because like I said, we don't normally...
It's not like everyone's getting their teeth.
Yeah, it's one of those where sometimes you could do a domestic project for a client, and for example, he might be a dentist, and then he says, actually, have you ever thought about doing some dental practice work? And we want to add an extra surgery, for example. So we've done a few, and then randomly, we've just had a whole load come at the same time. Some of them are connected in a sense that they might have 3 or 4 branches. Others are literally just completely separate. So I've got an interesting one at the minute in Husbands Bosworth, for example, in a grade 2 listed building there. And we're doing a private dental practice there with apartments above as well. But again, it's a quirky building, and it's if finished to the spec we're asking for, it could be a really, really good project. But it gives you an idea of where we are at the moment. And we've obviously...
And also where you're heading, because it seems like you're doing more bigger projects, commercial projects.
This is it. So we've got commercial, but an area which we're really keen to tap into, and we've started tapping into over the last kind of 6 months, is a hospitality, like hotel sector, and sports and leisure. So we've got people in our team now, because our office is made up of about 10 people.
Yeah.
But we've got people in our team who specialize in certain sectors as well. So that's areas which we're driving for.
You're starting from the foundations, bringing expertise within the business to then help
To tap clients,
and then
that
you're bringing a whole different array of different projects. Okay, so say if we've got let's get a bit more insight on. Imagine there's a new developer listening to this at the minute. What are the main things you would advise on a cost-effective project, doing it properly? Because even we were talking about before that how I've got it wrong, and it's a big learning curve. It's an expensive learning curve. So what would be your couple of points on make it cost effective for somebody?
Yeah, I think what it is, obviously, with some of the smaller developers, they typically look at, let's say, smaller projects initially, where you might be looking at a house and converting it into apartments or what have you.
Yeah.
I think what it is, you need to make sure you're getting the right advice from the right people. I think that's quite key. Sometimes what you find is, I don't know, a developer might bring a builder in straight away. That's the first point for them. But the problem is a builder will always look at it from his point of view, and sometimes it might be the easiest point of view, how things could be done in a certain way. And obviously, don't get me wrong, they have obviously the experience, but sometimes they're not thinking outside the box, or they're not thinking what's the most efficient use of space. So
but then it puts the client in a position to say, I've got two people saying two different things, and then it just gets so confusing.
It does, but then that's where you want to get like a, maybe a second opinion. So if you've got like an architect like myself, and I might give you an idea, for example, you could go to another architect, see what other ideas they've come up with. Because at the end of the day, the way design is done, there's not one way of doing things. You could bring a project to the table and you'll have eight different designs with eight different architects. So it's just different solutions.
Because you're tapping in someone's mind rather
than... That's what it is. You're paying for their time and their knowledge and experience and their creativity, which is what we try and say to people. So sometimes, like I say, clients sometimes think they know everything and they've got the ideas planned and it's already there. But once we look at it, we could probably squeeze a bit more out of it or sometimes not squeeze so much out of it and actually improve the quality of the space, which is obviously what I always try and encourage as well. Because obviously, like I said previously, you'd have clients who want to just literally want to maximize unit numbers and not really think about the longevity of the tenant who's going to be there. Because when you go too small on some of these apartments, you end up in a situation where you just get rolling tenants. Just literally every 6 months, new people are coming in. You're remarketing it.
And it seems that when you're drawing when you're getting the drawings done, it looks okay. Instead of 15, he's got me 20 units. But then, you're right, because if you look at it in a 10-year,
The long term.
The long term, you're thinking, hang on, there's so much chop and change, and I've lost money out on voids.
Yeah.
But whereas quality, the size, people are going to stay there longer.
And I think what you've got to look at as well, like if you look at Leicester's a big market in the property sector.
Yeah.
And if you look at this area, you find that although rental is very big, it's a big market, there are areas which are empty, like there are buildings which are still not occupied, and that's because the quality of the spaces are not very good. And obviously what people are doing now is investing more into quality spaces. If you look around the High Cross area, you've got apartments now which are very, very high end, which you would never have seen in Leicester 5-10 years ago. But now there's a market for it. There's a big market for it. So we're finding now people are having to offer something a little bit better than just a space. It's got to be a bit more quirky. Even for example, we do a lot of HMO work with a lot of clients, from small HMOs to large HMOs. And they're bringing interior designers in, because although clients think they know what they're doing, but as soon as you bring an interior designer in,
it's a whole different ballgame.
Yeah. Then you go into more of a boutique type HMO. But it's like the same with architecture. If you bring the experts in, they'll give you a different type of insight into what you've seen. Because, like I said, sometimes you get so fixated on how you think it's got to be done, you just need to get a second opinion. And I think that's what the architect hopefully would offer.
I think when people are looking at what they want to see, the end product, give that to the right guys and let them figure the route there, rather than you trying to cut corners and not doing it properly. Then it gets expensive.
It does. I mean, because sometimes people look at the short-term costs. They're looking at, the architect's charging X amount. But actually, I already know what I'm doing, for example, and the builders told me I can do it this way. But for example, if you just spend the money and you let the architect, let's say, run the project or even manage the project or offer the on-site support for the builder all the way through, as a client, you can just put your focus. I know it costs money, but you can put your focus on other things as well.
Yeah, your main job
generate more business in a different area. So your time is better spent rather than you running around picking materials up and dropping them off. And you don't want to be doing that.
Yeah.
And I think that's kind of, I know some people start that way, but as you go through, and you'll find the most successful people in this industry are the ones who literally delegate their work to the right people. And once you've got a good team, you can stick with that team. And I'm not saying you don't ever need to change that team, because sometimes people get stale and people's ideas change. But it'd be always good to kind of explore that. But if you get a good team, that's...
And if you're all creative, you've got the same vision and goal, then it works for everybody. So you're not going to... And for a... you know for a fact that you won't be paying you wouldn't be instructing the cheapest builder, the cheapest, because these guys, I've found personally that if you're going for the cheaper route, it's going to be more expensive. So long-term, when you've got the creative team, you've got the good designers, then project two and project three are just a click of a finger, unless there's a big problem, which always comes anyway.
Yeah, because we've got clients who are novices, let's say, who've come to us with a site, for example. We've done them a project and they've taken on a traditional contract and they've got the whole team involved from start to finish, from getting the planning permission all the way to completing. So we've been monitoring the works on site. We've been signing the quality of the work off. So we've been doing all that. So the client doesn't have to have that headache. So we do all the snagging.
Yeah.
And that's our job. But then that's allowed the client to then purchase two or three extra sites in different parts of the UK so that they can put their focus on it. Because like I said, they're not running around because they have a team. So yes, it's costing them money. But at the same time, if you look at the bigger picture, they're using their time to then find new opportunities. And that's worth more and more. And the good thing is as well, once you've done it once or twice where you've got a full team behind you and you get a taste for how that works, wouldn't look back after that. You wouldn't even need to think on your own.
Yeah, cool. Right, now you as a person, where do you see yourself taking this business in the next 5 years? I mean, you've come a long way already, and there must be so many stones unturned for you.
Yeah, I think... like I said, obviously we've known each other for some time, so you've seen us grow.
I've seen your growth.
But we've only just moved in. So what we've done is we've recently moved into these new offices probably about 8-9 months ago. So we've taken on a nice Grade 2 listed building, completely renovated it. But we've actually purchased this building because what we felt is actually Leicester's a really good market for us. Leicester's location is very good in terms of being not far from a train station. We've got projects now in London. We've got projects up north. So we've got projects scattered around. So our idea is obviously to start growing the business in a certain way where we're tapping into projects around the country as a standard. So we're still very keen to stick to our roots in the sense of the domestic market, our bread and butter type projects, because they still lead. They're good leads to have because, like I say, they can develop into something a lot further. Like you could be one day working with a client on a small domestic and all of a sudden it leads to something completely different on a more commercial level, which wouldn't have ever happened.
You've opened that door because of the small thing. Yeah.
So obviously we've got to be careful we don't go too small where it doesn't become viable, but we've got to get to a level where we're still happy to take on these domestic projects.
And this is not just a thing where this is for you. This is for every business because a lot of startups will think, I might not want to deal with this because it's going to be time consuming, it's not going to be that much, but there are certain, like even myself, I have smaller clients, but I know for a fact they put me on a speaker and say how good we are, and it comes from different things. So don't just concentrate on, okay, the dream is to have the biggest client in down south and they're paying the fees, but you're saying the foundations are always there with regards to domestic, but then opening doors is how you get the doors open.
And I said, we don't ever want to walk away from the smaller clients because in a way, even if we have to set a part of our office up to keep working on those kind of projects, we're still quite keen to do that.
Yeah.
Obviously, the big projects, like I say, are the nice ones to have, but they're long-term projects. They could go on for 12 to 24 months, whereas a small project could last a lot longer. But I think from our point of view, it is tapping into new sectors, growing the team, going from strength to strength really on larger scale projects. But we other areas you probably don't know about which we're involved in. So we do we're on public sector frameworks as well. So we deal with some councils. We deal with all their disability grants. We deal with all house adaptations for the whole of Warwickshire and Coventry or all of that side, for example. So our aim is to be on more government framework projects and tap into those kind of projects.
How do you go towards those type of public
sector? It's a lot of red tape. All it is, you're literally constantly filling in paperwork. Obviously, you've got to have some references and skills to showcase as well and go through interviews. But with those, there's a lot of time is spent behind the scenes. And this is kind of what people probably don't see so much. They see the architect practice, see the nice building, they see the projects we're doing. But there's a lot of work in the background. And unlike other fields, maybe with design, you pretty much could be inspired by anything at any time.
Yeah,
you know, from literally going anywhere on the weekend to
seeing a good Instagram post.
Well, obviously, seeing a good Instagram post. So it's one of those. So we'll always have to be switched on. So literally, the amount of time we spend, the amount of hours we put in, people don't always see. But like I say, you've got to look at the bigger picture. We're not here for the short term. It's more of a long-term thing for us as well.
Yeah.
And like I say, our brand is slowly becoming more and more recognised. And we've actually gone through a whole rebranding, as you probably know yourself, over the last year or so.
Yeah, I think the rebranding, and now you're more active on LinkedIn as well.
Yeah. So
Yeah. Tell us a bit more about that, because I've seen you do the videos, and I'm sure you're getting a good reach and engagement on them, because when I see your reactions and comments, it's much better than just a static post. So how's LinkedIn working for you?
Yeah, so we obviously, over the time, we've been trying to use social media in different ways, and obviously it's got bigger and bigger for us every year. And we work with various companies in different ways. But one thing we've learned is kind of doing your own social media is actually quite a good thing to do, as in you showing what you're about personally, showing what the business is about behind the scenes. Because before that, we used to pay companies just to literally tweet for us.
Yeah.
And in a way, they had no engagement. It was quite static. Some people still didn't know who we were. So then we made the decision, let's just do it ourselves. So in-house now, I spend a lot more time on my own. Obviously, in terms of platforms, I use LinkedIn more than the other platforms.
Because of the field of work you're in.
Yeah, I think because of the field I'm working in. But from a company's point of view, we still use all platforms. We use Instagram, Twitter, Facebook.
Yeah.
So we use all of them. But from a personal level, I think LinkedIn is where I get probably most of my engagement from.
Yeah.
And like you say, over the last kind of several months, we've been using videos as well as just static images, showing more animations before and after, CGI quality visuals. Because the good thing is with the business we're in, we're very visual with what we do. People like to see site progress photos every month to see where the project started, where it's got to, or even what the artist's impression is going to be of that project. But
the visuals, animation, something moving is getting more engagement.
Yeah, well, this is it. We've now in house, we have a lot of CGI specialists as well. Before, when we first started our company, we used to struggle to get anyone to tap into CGI visuals. If I said to a client, you've got to pay X amount for this visual, they weren't even interested.
No.
They said, no, it's fine, I'll just stick to the 2D plan and that's it. But now, I think because our projects are a bit more complex and a bit more interesting and the materials are different, and people see these kind of high-quality visuals and fly-throughs and walk-throughs, people are tapping into it.
Yeah.
We even do offer things like VR headset options where you can actually just stand in a room and spin 360 and you can see that room, how it could look when it's complete. So obviously, we're trying to tap into technology, and that technology works really well with social media because people love seeing fly-throughs and videos.
It's a visual thing, isn't it?
It's a massive visual thing. And like I said, we've won a lot of work, just people seeing visuals of projects we've done. And these are people we've never met before, people who aren't even in Leicester, for example. Like I said, off air as well, we've been speaking to clients down south who are looking for domestic extension projects doing, but they've just seen something we've done and they just loved what they've seen.
The power of social media is great. So if you're on it and you're engaged and you're creating constant content, you're going to see that.
You'll see
that in a snowball, snowball effect.
Snowball.
But what you're saying is because you've got creative guys within the business, you feel that it's more. I mean, we have clients and we always say to them, you should be doing your own stories because although we're your marketing agency, we would do the majority of the work to get you out there. But then I always feel the story side of things. People want to know what you guys are doing in the day. And when you look at your insights on LinkedIn and Instagram, it would just show that someone picturing their lunch and it looks good, you'll have more engagement than something boring.
No. I think that's exactly what it is. This is what I've said to you. Over the last few years, we used to pay a lot of money to a lot of people just to tweet for us. And you're thinking, actually, we've not got much out of it. And I think it's because that social aspect isn't even there, because it's just simple images and just typical quotes and other people's photos.
Well, the thing is, we started this business a year ago, and because we specialize in social media marketing, I know exactly what you're going for, because there's digital marketers out there saying, okay, we can do your social media for you, but it's just basic scheduling and posting out for you, which you could do. But the creative side of getting online sales funnels, video branding, call to actions with, you know, APIs done on a newsletter is where people should be. That's what I always promote.
Because I know you've encouraged me for years. Video, put yourself out there. And like you say, that's what's worked really well. So over the last kind of several months, we've been pushing more and more out. And that probably has got more engagement. And people have been messaging me directly who I've not spoken to in years, or new people, telling us how nice these videos are, because it's actually quite informative.
Yeah.
It's giving them a bit more of an idea of who we are without even having to meet us.
Yeah.
And like I say,
real as well.
It's real. And I think people, people buy from people. So
yeah,
it's not just always about just tweets. It's about who they're buying from. And
yeah, people want to know the man, man behind the brand or woman behind the brand, and find out exactly who they are and if they're comfortable. Because everybody always says, you know, you'd always think in the back of the mind, who are you actually paying the invoice to? And if it's a legitimate company, they're real, that you're on the same page, you feel confident, and it outweighs any other estimates or quotes someone gets. So people putting their face on that camera is working for, I think, 100% of people.
Yeah, no, definitely. I think I would definitely say, look, I was reluctant to do it for years and years.
But it's a hard thing.
Yeah, I think what is
when you get number one over.
Once in the very first one, I think then you think actually it's not as bad as you think it might be. But I think what it is, it's obviously one of those as well. You just got to make sure you've got content to keep talking about. But it comes to you quite easily because once you start seeing what you're talking about to other people daily, that's the kind of stuff people want to hear.
Yeah.
So you could easily be putting out a Q&A.
You don't want to be putting a front because then then you're doing reactive posts.
Yeah. So I think if you could talk to people and give them an insight into certain aspects of anything, it could be from when to build a house extension, for example, what's the right time of year to do it, or what you should look out for, little things like that. Actually, that's the stuff which kind of engages with people.
Brilliant.
And people want to know more about it.
Okay, cool, Kesh. I think we've covered a lot of aspects of you, your business, but I wanted to kind of finally end it on, I ask this all the time, where do you see yourself in 5 years personally and within the business?
Personally, I think I think it's one of those where I just want to make sure that we've got a good DSA brand which is set up. I think that's what it is. I mean, to get people to understand what we're about, understand that, look, we do think about our clients and we think about the design side. It's not just about, like I say, maximizing units and all that side of it. It's actually showing what creative design can be done within a cost-effective budget. I think one thing about us as a company is we know, we understand the cost of things as well. We're not just arty-farty kind of designers. Because we do developments ourselves as well, we've been in the industry for so long, we kind of know what we're putting on paper is affecting our clients. So I think that's why we're quite keen to keep showcasing that kind of personal approach in a more controlled size as well. We're not here to grow to 100, 200 people. I don't think that's what we're about.
That's not your intention.
It's not our intention. No. I think our intention is obviously grow organically and grow in various fields and showcase obviously good creative solutions, I think, in those areas. I think from my own point of view, it's pretty much just keep working hard, really, and seeing where we end up.
Do you envision that, though? Because it's the same thing, then, isn't it, that you've been doing? What do you see something different you'd be doing?
Yeah, I think, obviously, you want to take more time out from the business, but I think because we're still quite in early stages. We've been going for, 7 years? And I think now we're in a position where we've now got a dedicated base, we've got a brand, we've got the clients now.
The foundations are laid. The
foundations are there now. So it's up to us now to just keep adding to that. But I think, like I say, it's important to have that kind of family time as well, because when, as you know, you set your own businesses up as well, you spend so much time that you can easily miss out. And like, so I've got two kids as well, kids.
Both our kids are the same.
Yeah, same kind of ages. And it's like, you don't want to miss out on all of that. So you've just got to make sure you're going to get that balance, isn't it? And I think
it's the hardest thing to do.
But I think over the next 5 years, that's the aim, is to literally get that balance better. And I think it is getting there, because I've got good staff as well, and that's a good thing, and that's a really important thing in business, is having really good staff with you. And some of the staff we've got have been on the journey from day dot, so you can imagine they've seen the company grow and they're still with us, and obviously you can't take anything for granted. But
it gives you credit as well.
So it's all of that. So I think you've got people who complement what we're doing, but if you get to a stage where you've got the business set up in the right way, the right people around you, things can start taking care of themselves a little bit more as well.
You're at a stage where you've said, okay, right, we're ready to kind of experience different aspects, we've got the foundations laid, so now it's up, and you're saying you've got the good stuff as well, so this is where the ideal startup would want to be.
I think like we've spent the last 7 years now developing the brand, developing what we do, understanding what areas we want to go into, what clients we want, what clients we don't want. We know all that now. So I think from our point of view, everything is set up ready for a busy 5 years going ahead. But I think, like I said, for us it's very much, we've got a good ethos here in terms of our office and our setup. Our staff are vital with what we do. So we make sure we've got facilities for them. They're engaged with every decision we make as well. So it's not any type of dictatorship. That's not how we operate. That's not how I want to run a business.
You're not that type of guy.
If anybody knows Kesh,
he's a really nice, down-to-earth guy. Hence why I've brought you on. So I can confirm that.
So from that point of view, like I said, any decisions we make in our office, we typically would engage all the staff with it. And we want, because what it is, like I said, we're all a young business as well. We want people's ideas. And like I said, some people coming straight out of university might have a really good idea. We want to tap into that.
That's exactly what you want, because there's fresh ideas coming, which you weren't, 7 years ago, it wasn't even a thing. But getting the young people, but listening is the main thing, because you can't just think you're right. And if you do, you're not adapting to change as well.
No, I think that's it. And you've got to adapt to change. Like, for example, just only 6 months ago, when we set this whole office up, for example, we put in a whole staff area. So we've got pool tables, we've got table tennis, we've got gym, we've got everything being set up.
Oh, wow.
But it's more for the staff to enjoy. And you find that the staff are spending more time in the office now probably would, because obviously they've got options here. So like I say, you've got to listen to what needs to be done to kind of set things up. But like I say, I think if we get everything right, if the balance is right there from a personal level, it's just enjoying what we've set up and putting our stuff out for awards. I think that's a key thing for our profession, getting our buildings out there to show people what we're about, getting them into the public domains and put them into magazines and like I say, loads of award ceremonies. And that's, I think, where our brand will grow and go from strength to strength, hopefully.
Okay, brilliant. So I hope all of our listeners got a good insight of how DSA working, what their journey's been like and where they're progressing to. Kesh, if you want to put your socials out for our listeners to get you on, and we'll take it from there.
Yeah, so we're on, like I say, we're on all the on the various platforms. So LinkedIn, social media, we've got the Twitter, we've got Instagram. We've got the website, which is www.ds-a.co.uk. So from there, you'll see obviously all our social media. You'll see our portfolio, which is, like I say, quite visual. We're constantly taking photos of before and afters and progress photos. So if people are following us on those, and I think our Twitter feed is Design Studio Arc, that's probably got a lot of images, which is probably worth looking into.
Okay, brilliant. And also, if you enjoyed this podcast, please, please, please follow us and review us on Apple Podcast and Spotify. We're on Metric Connect on all of our socials. And my name is Atish Palmer. We hope to see you next week. And if there are any questions, direct to Keshiv, get him on LinkedIn, Keshiv Sidera, and I'm sure he'll be able to help. Thank you very much, Kesh, for joining us. It's been really insightful. And we will see you on more projects throughout the UK.
Yeah, hopefully. Yeah, well, thanks for having me.
Brilliant.